I've been through fires before, but nothing like this.
It was just like God had switched the lights off.
And the noise, it was like a stampede of wild horses, and you could hear the whips cracking, but it wasn't the whips cracking, it was fire.
You're listening to an original podcast series, Heart of the Storm, proudly brought to you by Bradwood FM.
We've got fires now crowding to the south of 6151, then heading towards Nerriga Road.
On December 21st, 2019, a firestorm hit the isolated town of Nerriga in southern New South Wales.
We've got fire coming up from behind the pub, over.
Phil and Sarah, the publicans of the Nerriga Hotel, took in their community, who sheltered in the pub, as firefighters battled the blaze.
It was a monster, mate.
It was just unbelievable.
This is their story.
My name is Sarah Smith. I've been living in Nerriga for 7 years. I am French and I'm from Paris and came out to Australia in 2006, where I met my lovely husband.
My name is Philip Smith and I grew up in Nerriga, and I used to come out to Nerriga back when it was a dirt road, and it was sort of nice to just go for a drive and sort of get away from things. So yeah, it has always been a dream. I remember talking to Sarah about the pub almost when we first met.
One day Phil came home and just said to me, the Nerriga pub's for sale. And I just said, like, where is Nerriga?
We're just so excited to be buying it and to moving here. I always sort of had a good feeling about the community.
It was very special when we first came, like from day dot. They just embraced us, really. We look at our community as our family.
I'll just make this quick cup of tea, Mark.
If my voice is horrible, will you delete it?
My name is Helen Rolland.
My name's Matt Jocelyn.
Greg Moss, my name.
My name's Braden Betts.
Delivers hams, open beers. What can't he do?
I'm Betty Temple.
Wayne Temple.
Colin Temple.
Well, I'm Yvonne Rolfe.
Lived here all my life.
My name's Lisa and we're at my property in Nerriga. Welcome to the farmyard. We've been here coming on 10 years now. Yeah, I was quite ill when I came here mentally, so this was just my get well plan. So, sorry, I get a bit emotional.
Just a nice little community hall.
This is what we call God's country.
It really is.
What town can you buy a beer but you can't buy a bottle of milk? It's probably the only town in the world.
The hotel is the main hub here, and if you don't go to the hotel, you don't really meet people.
My name is Pamela Park.
My name's Justin Park.
Justin is my eldest
I'm
son.
I'm local of Nerriga and the Nerriga Fire Captain.
Yes, I'm an extremely proud mother.
My name's Josette Alistair. I'm a member of the Nerriga Rural Fire Brigade. Oh, I only joined in October 2018. You would say I had limited experience.
We'd lived here for 9 years, you know, when there'd been bushfires 9 kilometres away. You just think, nah, you know, we're all right. It'd been really dry. Everybody was in the drought. We had no water here, none. The dam was dry. The tanks were dry.
We're off the back of 3 years of drought, probably some of the worst drought conditions ever recorded in this country. And so the fuel loads have just increased and increased over time. It really was a disaster waiting to happen.
The threat overnight's been that of lightning strikes, sparking fears of fresh bushfires. More than 80 fires are burning in the state at an advice alert level. 50 are yet to be brought under control.
I guess it was a month before where it all started. Looked like it was coming and then it wasn't, and then it was coming and it wasn't. It started down around Batemans Bay area or in the Currawin fire, and then it gradually moved up to Charlie's Forest.
The Thursday, the Tianjara fire started, so then all of a sudden there were two fires, really, one on each side.
It sort of got closer and closer, and one of the local RFS guys, he said, look, given the current weather and the forecast, he said it's probably a good time to get the children away. Sarah's father was visiting at the time and his partner from France, and so they took Hugo and our youngest Oliver, who was still breastfeeding, so we couldn't really send him away.
I mean, we knew the fires were around, but we never really anticipated that it would come with that much rage.
When we first saw it on the 19th, we were at Braden's, and a sea fog came in, the easterly sea fog that comes in across Mongala, and then we could hear a noise. As soon as I heard the noise, I realised what was going on. Myself and my stepson drove east along the trail that we'd put in, and that's when we saw the crowning fire. So this came out of a smoke and sea fog combination, and this thing came out like it was alive. And that's when I knew we were in for a bit of strife, I suppose. So.
The Thursday night we started getting like the RFS emergency messages giving instructions as to what to do. The first house in Narrega burnt on the Thursday night. Then the Friday, we had some workers that were with us and we sent them away because of the forecast for the Saturday.
Catastrophic fire conditions are expected today and a state of emergency remains in place as scorching temperatures are forecast in parts of the state.
They're predicting up to 90 kilometres per hour gust with the southerly burst of change. And that, on top of hot fuel, is going to be causing some major, major problems.
Mm.
Gold Sector Leader, 321 Alpha.
I'm currently captain of the Queen Bin City Rural Fire Brigade.
Go ahead.
I've been doing, I've been a volunteer firefighter of the mixture of the RFS and the CFA in Victoria for about nearly 20 years now. This would be sitting up there well beyond anything that I've ever seen before.
It was all going good until about 2 o'clock when the wind changed and the wind shift started to come.
You read a lot about the theory of bushfires and how things happen and how quickly conditions change, but it's not often that you see it actually unfold in front of your eyes.
You know that containment line we just put in?
Every time I lead a crew out, there's this sort of nervousness, and particularly on these catastrophic days, there's this nervousness. People die on these catastrophic days, and people's homes are going to get burned down, and there's no way to fight it.
Here we go. She's come over the crags. You see flames now. Definitely getting close.
The smoke was getting thicker and thicker over behind us. The wind started to change, and it just went still. It was big puff, big mushroom cloud of smoke goes up in the air.
That's called a pyrocumulus cloud, and it forms over the top of a very powerful smoke column.
I suppose like an atom bomb. Yeah. Just blew out 360 degrees. Wow.
30 seconds ago, none of this was here.
When that wind change came through, it was just incredible. I've never seen it move so fast. The heat, the intensity.
I was at home with my son. We were sitting watching. And we saw the start of what was coming towards Narrega. This area just sort of lit up. From there, it just, yeah, went crazy, I suppose you can say.
All fire ground is now on emergency alert.
You may be in danger and need to take action immediately. Any delay now puts your life at risk.
Robin called and I answered the phone and she just said to me, like, I would like to speak to Phil.
She just said, it's at my place. It'll be at the pub within half an hour or 40 minutes. Get everyone to the hall.
I've been with fires before, back in, I think, early 2000s. We had fires here. I actually said I'd never fight another fire. I would walk away when there was a fire. And when this fire actually started up, I left. I went to Nowra. I was watching all the news and whatever else and what was happening in Braidwood, and I thought, can't do this. Came straight back.
It was good to have Matt. He obviously had more experience and more of an understanding.
Matt's lived here a long time and he was a member of the RFS at one stage. Yeah, if he hadn't been here, it would have been a lot harder.
They were going to stay and we couldn't leave them on their own. But yeah, they're good people.
Probably shouldn't say it, but after Sarah had left, I went and sat down in the shed and had a beer. I thought, I just need to sit down and get a plan.
He had in his head what he was trying to achieve with his sprinklers. I just left him to it. He knew, he had his plan, and I just got onto mine. Finding all things I said I was never going to use again. Setting up a little mosquito for the back of the ute and whatever. Come back here and have something to help defend the pub with.
Yeah, just picking up data at the moment. Still heavy, heavy smoke in this location here in a heavy globe. Still unable to identify the fire. Finger of fire has gone around to the west of Narrega, turning up towards Willow Forest Road.
He obviously had large fingers of fire coming out from the actual main fire front, burning towards Narrega, plus just unknown number of spot fires starting. There was nothing we were going to do or anything we put in could stop what happened. Now, when you got spotting 8Ks in front of the main fire, it just everything is exploding. There's nothing that's going to, no dozer line of highway's not going to stop that.
And yeah, it does get depressing. The operator gets down because he's spent a whole day cutting through the bush. You get to the end of the containment line and you look back and the fire's nothing. Jumped it and it's just done nothing.
Go check the bunker door, 1 Alpha.
Go ahead.
Yeah, bunker door 1 Alpha, as you're aware, we're at 6151. For your information, we now have embers starting to fall on this location.
Received all that, just heading south along Narrega Road. The heavy plant, we're going to just do a quick recon.
Yeah, just looking at the sky where I am, it's not far away from us.
You're almost disorientated a lot of the time because of the smoke and the lack of visibility, and then you'd see trees explode.
Matt and myself stayed here and got all the sprinklers going and went and checked the generator. I had fueled it up and everything, but the battery was flat. And so I had the lawnmower out the back. I just ran out there and cut all the wires off the battery and got the generator going.
I got my uniform out from back in 2000. I discovered that was 30 kilos ago. I ended up giving that to Sarah with the baby, and I just said, here, just wrap yourselves in that if you have to.
I took our baby, Oliver, with me, and I went up to the hall. I was sort of in and out of the hall going to check with Josette if there was anything I could there was limited amount of things I could do, but if there was anything I could assist with. I just remember looking at Josette, because at that stage it was just us. There weren't any fire trucks or anyone there.
She walked up to me with her little walkie-talkie she had in her hand, and she said,
is anyone coming?
And the smoke's coming in, and she said, Joe, is anyone else coming?
And Josette just looked at me and she just said, like, yeah, they'll come.
The fire had started to jump and started to intensify. Unfortunately, there was no trucks in Nerriga at that time, because everyone was starting to do property protection down further and were cut off by the fire.
It's not so much a front as a series of spot fires that are looping across and into open areas.
So, you know, we're seeing that fire-generated weather definitely having an impact.
Yeah, mate, you've got spot fire at 337047. It's jumped in Nerriga Road again.
It's getting dark and red, and the smoke is just, like, unbelievable.
I had no idea what was coming, and you just see the ash started blowing, and Matt had asked for a cloth to put around his face and goggles, and I thought, oh, I'll be right, I don't need those, and then next minute I didn't see why he needed them.
We did look at each other at one point and said, are we doing the right thing?
Should we be here or not?
I said, well, who knows, but if you're staying, I'm staying.
Yes.
And then Terry Wingate turned up, and he had a couple thousand litres of water on and his own beer.
He got out of his ute with the shorts on and stubby of VB in his hand, and he said, my place is gone, and I thought the pub can use the water.
So how it worked is, my place, I've seen the flames, and they were like, bloody hell, they were hiding the trees, you know, like, right up there to bugger, and thought, well, I ain't going to fight that, you know, like, you don't mind fighting things, but you ain't going to commit suicide. So bugger off into the pub here, give them a bit of a hint.
It was so reassuring, because at this stage the RFS hadn't turned up to the village or to the pub.
We've just issued an emergency alert for the areas, basically all the way from Nerriga south through to Tudor Valley Road. If people are in those areas, they need to shelter as the fire arrives.
If you are threatened by fire, take shelter as the fire approaches. Take shelter in a solid structure to protect yourself from the heat of the fire.
I'd been listening to the radio and all the rest. I walked out the back and had a look, and you could see the big plume way over in the distance, sort of thing, and set up the sprinklers on the roof of the house and had the fire hose around the back. Thought I'd better put a few things in a suitcase, like kids' photo albums, and sort of getting into half a panic mode, thinking that this is going to happen. So I had the ball going and the sprinklers going, and it eventuated that the power went out, so then the bore went out, so we lost water. I grabbed my little dogs, threw them in the ute, and I had a little parrot there that was in big cages I couldn't lift out of the house, and yeah, I just give him some water and seed and just said, mate, I'll see you when I get back, sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm all leaving.
The first truck that got into town was Ridgeway.
Yeah, Nick, I'm back in Nerriga. Mate, it's pitch black here. I can't even see 30, 40 metres in front of me at the moment.
I was Annie. Thing with flashing lights in the town at that point.
Just give me 2 seconds, I've got to get a report.
And when everyone starts to rock in and trying to seek shelter at the community hall, and there's no fire trucks or there's no protection, it is a dwindling feeling. You do feel more isolated. The local fire station had gone down, we're running off a generator, and they were starting to run low on fuel, so it was intermittent with radio comms, no power, so there was no electricity, there was no phones, there was no water.
We got a notification from one of the local Nerriga crews that there was an elderly lady who was trapped in her house. It was probably about 3 or 4 kilometres to the south-east of Nerriga.
I believe it to be Edric River Road.
Once we started getting there, it got really, really, really dark. There's a lot of trees coming down. And that was the first sign of, like, trees are falling and the fire isn't here yet, so they've been blown over by the massive wind change. Probably the first time I've actually been, felt a bit of fear.
The wind was howling and you could hear the roar of the thing sort of coming. So, yeah, we jumped in the car. And before I was even out of the driveway, there was starting to spot fire.
I got in the car. These fireballs were coming down on either side of the driveway. It was raining fire. The driveway was starting to catch fire. So I got to the top of the driveway and I turned right to head out into Nerriga.
In the hall, there was kids, there was older people, a lot of vents, and it was just filling up with smoke, and there was not a happy atmosphere, and it was hot in there because there was no aircon.
They were very concerned for all our elderly people because the breathing conditions were so bad.
It was like we were all going to get asphyxiated.
Yeah, I'm an asthmatic, so I had to be careful regarding the smoke from it.
I kept saying to Betty, are you all right? Oh, God, don't go out on me, please. You got your puffer, Betty? Yes. Are you all right, Betty? Yes. That's what you do, I suppose. I don't know. Worry about someone else, not so much yourself. And they were also quite concerned, actually, for our son, for Oliver. So I spoke to Phil on the radio. I remember I was being a bit emotional. Because we discussed it when we evacuated Hugo. Phil asked me to go and take both children. And I said no. And kept saying sorry to Phil because I didn't know that it'd be that bad.
I don't know how far this is.
No, that's okay.
You've got one truck, a whole town, and people are starting to panic. Yeah, that just puts another factor into decision making and what we've got to do.
I couldn't leave Phil here. There was no way. I was always set with stay and do whatever we could to help.
He said, do the locals know you? And I said, yeah, the locals know me. He said, well, can you help round them up? He said, we're going to have to get them out of this hall.
We ended up quickly calling a meeting. Sarah was there and she did offer. The pub had the generator running, which was keeping some fans running, which kept it cooler.
So I called Phil on the radio and I just let him know that they were evacuating everybody back to the pub.
And then everyone came down from the hall into the pub. Oh no, now we're looking after people, not just a building.
Phil tried to prepare as much as he could, wetted towels and put them under all the doors to try and prevent the smoke from coming in too much more.
That was probably the lowest point. All of a sudden it was on us.
Copy, Nick.
Yes, mate.
Yeah, whereabouts are you, mate?
I'm about 25 metres in front of you, standing on the road.
Yeah, righto, gotcha.
We were actually on Endrick River Road trying to get into that lady in the house who is reported as being trapped. And then the tree came across the road. At that point, decided that something much bigger than what we can deal with is going on here. So gave the word for everyone to withdraw back to Nerriga.
All the fire trucks started rolling into the village. And I think in the end, there were about 15 trucks came back to protect the village.
We dug in around Nerriga and we put all resources around all the houses, the fire station, and most importantly, the pub.
The time I got up to the pub, it was actually raining fire. It was just unbelievable.
There was a mad rush to get set up because it was getting darker and darker and you could see the glow of the fire. It was very hard to tell where the fire actually was and how far away because it just got darker and darker and glow, and the next minute it's nothing, 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 and then bang, there's flame.
People at the Nerriga pub, we've got fire coming up from behind the pub, over.
This guy just got out and he just went, everyone inside, it's coming.
Is she going rogue? Shit storms here to go.
You guys all good, you're safe?
Yeah.
As the fire came through, you could hear gas bottles going off.
Did that sound before at 8:00?
And you know, when gas bottles start to go off, that means the house is burning or burning down. And you thought, oh, I wonder who that was.
Boom, boom, it just kept going on and on.
Yeah, it was sort of a bit harrowing for a while. Yeah.
Fire is currently coming out of the trees behind the fire shed into the grassland, over. Significant flame height and significant ember attacks.
And there was, I don't know how many fire units up around the pub just hosing that down. That what those guys did standing out in that, putting their own life in peril to save us. was amazing.
Thank you.
I had to be careful regarding the smoke from it. So I think that's how I come to end up in you guys' bedroom with Yvonne from down the road.
Betty and I have always been friends, close friends.
We didn't have a window that you could look out or anything, so, yeah, we were very sheltered from it.
So it was only natural that we got the baby to look after.
Sarah brought in the baby and, yeah, he was lovely. It was really hot and he was teething. And Sarah brought in some ice. While ever Oliver was with us, we had something else on our minds. It was when Oliver went to have his nap, then your mind started to run riot.
There's things I don't really remember because there were so many people, but I do remember when they said, like, we could go outside. I remember going outside.
Sorry.
Leon had just watched his house explode.
It was just in time when we walked out the front, the gas bottle exploded and we saw the explosion go up into the sky sort of thing and thought, oh, yeah.
And he just looked at me and he said, like, oh, she's gone.
Yeah, so it was quite terrifying. I don't think I've ever been that scared in my life.
I did feel sorry for one lady. She was sitting right next to me and her partner came in and he just said, everything's gone. And she absolutely nearly went hysterical. And all I could do was put my arms around her. Like, what could I say to her? She looked at me and she said, 42 years and I'm not insured.
It was just by the grace of God that we all didn't perish in it, mate.
The main of this fire front's gone past it. Yeah, we're pretty rocked to start moving around, I think.
There were some concerns for people's lives and welfare.
We'll get to Hendrick first. Yeah, we'll have a look at it.
We did expect the worst after what had happened.
I'll see what units I can get.
There was one case there, the lady that was unaccounted for.
Yeah, the only lady by the name of Rhonda, mate. Yeah, just give us a group when you're on scene.
Communication had been cut and the uncertainty of her welfare was also playing in our minds.
Yeah.
I might just
have to scoot
up and have a look. The trees are coming down already. We started just pushing them through and push them in and...
We actually ended up sending a machine down there and having to cut our way through.
Mate, we got a car up here on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Going down there, there was a guy, just this old beaten up ute coming up the road towards us.
Yeah, he's that landowner.
Okay, my name's Carl. I lived at 421 Hendrick River Road. Everything I had is gone. From the time I was 6 years old till the time I was 72, everything I accumulated is gone.
He had his car and he had his dog and he was still alive, so that was a saving grace for him.
I went over to the Flores and I said, can I go in home? And he said, jump in the truck, mate, I'll take you in. We can't stay, but we'll just go and have a quick look. Just drove into devastation, mate. House was on the ground and tractor shed was all burnt, everything was burnt. It was just heartbreaking, like, the realisation of it all hit, and it was just like, whoa.
We'll have to catch up. There are property losses everywhere down this road.
Yeah, roger, receiver. Yeah, it's a little bit hairy getting here at the moment with all the trees. I don't really want to see some units in.
Oh, it took us about an hour or so of doing some destruction and trying to clear the roads. All of a sudden, we just come open and here's his house.
Is that Rhonda?
Yeah, it's Rhonda there.
And she walks out and
beauty.
Happy days.
All right, my name's Rhonda. I did live up at 421 Hendrick River Road.
Rhonda is accounted for.
Somebody said that there was an elderly lady trapped. So when I went into the pub, the guy goes, are you Rhonda? And I went, not the elderly one. He goes, I was so glad to find you.
It was pretty relieving. Yeah, it was good.
Well, they expected me to come in on a Zimmer frame or something. I thought it was very nice of them to have worried. I didn't realise that they were so worried.
You all right,
mate? Yeah, you'll meet me tomorrow, but I'm keeping it together.
We all sit together as a community, all right?
Yeah.
Look after yourself tonight. That's important,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, no worries.
People needed to be fed, and so I just got into the kitchen and got stuck in cooking and cleaning.
Once the pub became the safe place, everybody was welcome at any time.
I went up to the pub and the firemen were getting fed. And I looked and thought, oh, I haven't eaten. It was the first time in my life. I'd just gone 2 days without eating and didn't even know, you know. And there's Justin's wife and a 14-year-old kid
all in uniform, just come back from fighting a fire, black all over, you know, to see a lady and a 14-year-old kid that had been out there in the bush fighting it all night and day with no sleep. You're just going, wow, that's incredible.
There's lots of people that put in time, effort and didn't question, they just did it. On my personal side, for probably more like 12 weeks, my husband was out there. Like, he would leave home at 6:30, 6:45 of a morning. I would go to sleep on the lounge, waiting for him, thinking, oh, it's 10 o'clock, he'll be home soon. It was 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he'd come in, he'd go to bed and get up and do the same thing again.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty defining moment in anybody's firefighting career, I suppose, to witness it and see what does, particularly in your own town, when it's people you know that are affected and houses that you've seen all your life gone. You drive past a house every day and then all of a sudden there's nothing there, and that takes a bit of getting used to, if you can, I don't know.
You get home and you couldn't sleep, you think, what could I have done? Could have done something different. We still ask ourselves the same questions, but at the end of the day, the safety for our crews and the safety for the community, you know, that was always priority. We all walked away from that, so, you know, that's a big tick in the box for us.
Sarah and Phil helped so much with this fire. It was incredible.
Phil and Sarah rose to the occasion magnificently.
And they were putting people up, people sleeping on the floor of the pub. And
especially Sarah, she's just so good for the community.
They brought back what a publican is.
They're just doing a wonderful thing, and it's just nice they've still got their little dream.
Bill and Sarah, Justin, Robin, all the crew, everyone was backing up day after day. It was pretty amazing to be part of that, I guess.
The good people of Neriga stepped up.
Yeah, Christmas Day as well, pretty special.
It was
special day.
Special.
I think it was probably the first time since the roads have been sealed that people were able to go and dance on the road.
Sarah actually gave me an envelope with some money in it that a lady donated. And even now, I still feel like crying about it when I think about it. It was just such a nice thought, you know, like, it really was.
For almost a month, we didn't lock the doors of the pub.
It was actually really nice. What's come out of it, the friendship, the beautiful gestures of kindness are really special.
Just the support that came from all over Australia really was amazing. How the whole country comes together just for the small areas, it was very special. And I think a lot of the times people sort of think the Australian spirit's been lost. Times like this where you actually see it's still as strong as ever.
We just got to brush ourselves off, mate, get up and go again, I guess. I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would have seen a bulldozer driving through my lounge room when the clean-up was going on. We can rebuild a house, but you couldn't rebuild a mate.
In the space of a week, I just met so many people, and I thought, oh, so this is what I've been missing, you know. You got a real sense of community, and I thought, well, OK, now I belong. There's a lot of lonely people out there, I think, and just to experience that, it's life-changing, it is.
It's not something that people are going to forget, but eventually, hopefully, it just won't hurt anymore. They'll just be part of who they are.
Yeah.
That was the second episode of an original podcast series, Heart of the Storm, proudly produced by Braidwood FM. This production would not have been possible without the generous support of the Braidwood Community Bank, Queanbeyan and Palarang Regional Council, Braidwood Community Help Fund and Braidwood FM. Special thanks to Nick Hornbuckle, Ryan Powell, David Hansel and of course the good people of Neriga.
But that's my story of the event, I guess.
So that's our story.
I gotta get back to work.
Braidwood Radio is a community organisation run by volunteers. To support us to keep providing quality service to our community, you can donate at braidwoodradio.com.au/donate.